said.
Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral. Okay.
And we are back. And guys. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for spreading the word. Thank you for going to Sportsaholics on Twitter, Sportsaholics at John, JONIsHere.com, and just sharing the links. It's been great. We've been getting good feedback. And, it's nice, and it's good to be here. And we are coming to you live from, Eric, go ahead and intro it.
We are coming from Pacific Beach, California. We are Surfside people. We are on location,
PB.
Comedy Store condo. And it's happening. I'm looking at the ocean right now. And if you think I'm thinking about sports, I'm not. I'm thinking about some. Wow, there are some lovely wildlife
see,
out
I'm
there.
I'm gonna have to just draw the curtains because what's great about this condo?
Hypnotic.
Which it's right on the boardwalk. And for those of you that have been to Pacific Beach, Northern San Diego, you know it's right where that pier that jets out, and it's got the little cottages on it.
Sure.
Well, the condo that the Comedy Store owns is right here, and. That is really distracting. It's a perfect day, fall, early fall. What is 85? Sun's out. It's
beautiful.
It's still summer.
Beautiful.
It's still summer, and it's very distracting.
Lovely ladies out baking in the sun.
To give you an idea, in this condo, this building, there's probably at least three or four residents that have come here strictly just to die. Like they're on their deathbed, and they're coming here just to live out their last days, looking. At this goddamn distraction.
Oh, you're saying there are comics that decided to die here?
No, I'm saying like the guy in the wheelchair that just got his door open two doors down that's like on air,
right.
Staring out the window,
right.
Wondering like what went wrong in the 70s in his life.
Nothing. He just blew out a tire there.
Yeah.
It's just like at a certain point you have too much fun. The mortal coil, the body, the spaceship your body can only take so much wear and tear, people. You
yeah,
gotta take care of it.
Pace yourselves out there. We want, and that goes for us. We gotta pace ourselves.
You're just a toaster. Your soul is the electricity that runs through a toaster that will break down. You are VCR, and at some point, you will be replaced.
And I didn't mic up the ocean. I thought about it. So if you hear a subtle like, you know what? Here's what I'm gonna do.
If you're a calming influence, if this episode turns out to be the most calming, relaxing Sportsaholics you've ever heard. There's a reason. It's
not
going to
be on my behalf. I'm jacked up and ready. Here, I'm gonna turn up the volume. See if we can even just pick it up.
Pump up the volume.
No. You can't talk, but we'll see if we can pick up the ocean, the waves. Here. This is an attempt.
Gotta put your mic. Turn it up at home. That's about.
There you go. That moment of silence was brought to you by the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, and beautiful weather.
And Zen relaxation.
So okay, I've been everywhere. I'm going to call myself Johnny Cash this episode.
Man around just, the world and
just got back from Washington and attended my first Seattle Mariners game. And in the height, I've got baseball fever worse than I've ever had in my life right now.
So you've been in that weird silo barn they call Safeco.
It felt very Japanese, like not just the makeup of the audience or the people in the crew, but it's stacked on top of each. So you're sitting in the outfield, and the outfield bleachers give the appearance of one of those very steep. If I were to stand up and fall, I would land on the field.
Like one of those terraced villages in South America.
But I enjoyed the experience. It was the A's. Losing again, and
the A's don't seem to have it.
No,
the curse of Moneyball, bro.
They're folding. I mean, it was that trade, really.
I know, and the trade that, by the way, the trade that mainstream baseball all hailed as, you know, Moneyball finally cashing in and going for it, and it seems like the cashing in and going for it, it's almost like it threw out. It's like they should have just kept Sabetta. They would have been better.
Here's what the Oakland A's are. The Oakland A's are that they're that conservative blackjack player that plays $5 a hand. All night long and slowly, slowly builds up his bankroll. And then it's like, you know what? I'm going to go. This is it. I'm going to go in all in on this hand, and then they lose. That's what's happened at this point.
They don't
take big gambles, and the few times they have, this is what happens.
Okay, not to get into the stuff like, hey, we don't...
That they're acquiring people all the time.
We don't understand the inside workings of trading in baseball, and that's not what this show is about. But, Cheezer, here's the thing. It's like, can you think of a major, major trade that's happened before during a pennant race? Like an ace, like John Lester, goes to a team in contention, and... I mean, like, I feel like the Boston media and Twitter Nation, if you will, like, there's been this real turd in the punch bowl since Lester got traded, which was that whole thing, like, he might come right back to the Red Sox. Like, I mean, honestly, can you think of another trade recently that a major star goes to a team in a hunt? Like, we've just made a major acquisition because we're in a pennant hunt, and somehow... Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like he did everything but say, I mean, like every weird little piece of body language and the world and the world of like, you know what I mean? It's like the whole internet viral whispering campaign, like, hey, LeBron's going to go back to Cleveland. LeBron's going to go back to Cleveland, which I actually honestly didn't believe. But there's this weird thing going now. Like,
wait, LeBron went back to Cleveland?
Spoiler alert. So there's that weird thing where it's like, you know, I feel bad for Oakland that they got Lester. It's like Lester should be like more like I feel bad for Oakland that it's not a happier like we got this warrior to help us win this war. Not like, oh, we got this guy and he's going to leave right away. It just feels like it feels like.
Hey, they knew what the risk and reward was, and they went for it. And, you know, they just got some blanks, it looks like.
I'm just saying, like, somehow...
Or actually, they lost the gun to shoot
any bolt. I'm talking about this somehow on the weird quantum physics fan. Like, look, dude, you believe in superstition and a watch game matters. Or, you know, it's like there's this weird thing that happens when a thing is observed. You know, it's like the reason we had that great royal story about your good South Korean friend who came and all of a sudden the great winning streak and you end up in first place. Like... That's what's great about the weird quantum physics of fandom, if you will. And now there's this weird thing, like, in that same weird, you know, this is what fans believe. This is why you don't leave that chair during a Super Bowl. It's like something has happened that's sort of, like, outside of the numbers.
Every salt grain is in its right position, you know, whether that's the hat's in the right spot on the shelf. You know, the baseball cards in the right drawer, you know, whatever it is.
Right. I mean, I once kicked a date out of Barney's Beanery. It was game 5 of the 2004 ALCS. She mistakenly, I'm going to put
this
in quotes.
Was that against the Angels?
No, it was against the Yankees.
Oh, the Yankees.
It's the comeback.
Right.
It's the greatest comeback ever.
That's right.
And she happens to say, come on, Derek, instead of like strike out Derek. And Derek Jeter does a classic Derek Jeter thing and bloops that little Derek Jeter classic single into right field and gets on base. And I literally and she was there with her young child. And, you know, we were there to enjoy the game and eat and drink. And I was like, get out. I was just like, get out. And she's like, you're going to kick me out of this bar. I'm like, yes, I'm going to kick you out of this bar right now because you're saying the wrong thing. And she's like, I am so humiliated. I'm like, you know. I understand. I'm not saying it's right.
Nice.
I'm saying
you did the opposite of the goodwill
hunting.
No, I'm
saying she's got to leave. I'm like, that's just I I'm going to cut out the cancer right away.
Yeah, I didn't go to the game. I wasn't there.
Right. I knew the Patriots. I was down. I was so down week 1 of the NFL that it had been a personally bad week for me, and so I knew, and it had been so bad that personally I knew the Patriots were going to lose because I didn't even care if they won or lost. I no longer gave a care about the coming NFL season. And so there was a point where I look, guys, just so you know, everybody out there in New England Patriot Nation, first loss is on me. Just want you to know that. I'm going to take
it. Well, it's good that you fess up to it and own up to it.
And it was my fault the whole way. I did it. I let the whole team down. I took that loss. I'm not necessarily saying I'm more happier or better off in my life.
I haven't seen you in a Patriots jersey in months. That's all I can say.
Well, that has nothing to do with it. By the way, right now I'm not wearing a Patriots jersey because I don't want to taint the mighty colors with anything that might
be
wrong
with me. But you do have property of America.
I am being owned by
I am
the
athletic department, which is very patriotic.
Right. I keep it real. I'm where America started. You can't
all
spell
the time.
America without Eric right in the middle.
Well, I'll tell you where America stopped in Seattle, and it was
all right.
It was it was great. What if you haven't just go to Seattle if you haven't been, just take a week in there, go in the summer. So it's not
a lovely four blocks of a city.
I've been to Seattle four or five times. I've never gotten caught up in rain. I've been lucky, gone at the right times of the year. Just
summer.
And look, you could take a bus, train anywhere downtown. The stadium's within walking distance. You know, it's kind of hilly or whatever, but there's stuff to do there.
It's deep.
It's pretty. People there's homeless people everywhere. I mean, there's Tent City, not Occupy for any cause. It's Occupy because
they're occupied.
Why not? They're sleeping here in a tent. Why shouldn't I?
All we need is a tent.
So that was kind of weird. A lot of white people in dreadlocks, which is pretty common up there. I don't know if it's the rain or what exactly, which is because most of them do have REI like waterproof jackets on. So it's kind of
campers.
It's different, but
they don't need a lot of objects, but what they have has to be waterproof.
But I'll tell you this, right? Seattle is quickly encroaching on kind of like Steelers fandom, like It's
you're saying the Seahawks since the Super Bowl has put it all like it's crazy Seahawk country.
Do they have a Seahawks snack pack or something at McDonald's? It's like two.
Really?
It's like two combo meals for like $12 or something.
Really?
12th man. It's probably 12-12. So you know something like that.
Wow. So McDonald's is still marketing top 13.
12th man flags everywhere. 12th man American flags. Just
right.
Xbox, who like sponsors their soccer team, I think. Like this Xbox green, that lime green,
okay,
is the theme of that city.
Oh, I see.
Like that comes up in the Seahawks, you know, and the soccer team. So now it's like every sports bar, you just see that color everywhere, which is kind of weird. But it reminded me of being in the Midwest. It's just fucking fat people everywhere wearing football jerseys that had 12 on them, you know? And so when I did my show, I always like to have fun with the audience. So I come out immediately and just start shitting all over the 12th man. You know, how much do you guys pay Texas A&M for that?
Yeah, you do.
How much do you guys pay? You stole it from some college thing? Like, no, we're the 12th man. It's like, no, you're not. Right. You just took it from Texas A&M. So they're just like,
they have to pay for it.
You know, and I'm like throwing in some jabs, you know, and then I just go into old Seahawks players.
Steve Largent.
No, well, that was
Jim Zorn.
I capped it off.
The other Kurt Warner.
I capped it off with, I go, Steve Largent may or may not be a homosexual. And then they all I was like, I'm just messing around with you guys. I just like to stir everything up before.
Didn't they have like Scott Zoliak? I mean, didn't they have weird, like they had some weird.
No, you know who I forgot I should have gone with was Bosworth. Completely.
Oh, sure.
That's like the go-to that I think.
Hasselbeck.
Hasselbeck, yeah. I went with like the Cortez Kennedy, Benny Blades, like the mid-90s roster.
Oh, Benny Blades.
The mid-90s roster, kind of like when I was collecting football cards. Like those are the guys that I'm
thinking. Then you remind them they don't have NBA basketball and they all booed you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's easy.
You can win all the Super Bowls you want, Sonics.
But okay, this is a crazy episode, and I should have mentioned it earlier. We had Art Stewart. I interviewed Art Stewart again last week, and look, I'm going to apologize now. The sound is like really, it's heavy. The quality is crap, and like I feel horrible. I was moving at the time, and it was kind of a setup improv. We were trying to align schedules.
Recorded
so
underwater.
It kind of sounds like that at times.
Overdubbed it on the Zapruder
I did
film.
The best I could to adjust everything, but please be patient. But it's a great. You know,
think about it as sort of old timey radio. Okay, this is a throwback piece to a classic man.
Just
in baseball.
go out and buy the man's book. It's out right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely, go buy this man's
it's
book.
It's doing so well that they've actually gone now into a second print, which is great. So, go the art of scouting by Art Stewart. I know he's been signing copies around the Kansas City area recently, so look for that if you guys are listening in that area. But outside, just baseball fans, just pick up a copy, the Art of Scouting with Art Stewart. But guys, sit back, be patient again, like I said, with the audio, and enjoy.
Welcome to Old Time Radio with John Shiza and Art Stewart.
The wisdom of Mr. Art Stewart. Freddie Patek, Cal McRae.
The 1980 pennant brought a royal cheer. I'm talking baseball. Willie Wilson, Georgie Brett, Royal Baseball. Akins, Tom Poquette, Leonard and Gura throw the pea. Darryl Porter, whoops, he's in St. Louis. Talking baseball, baseball in KC. Now when you're talking royal baseball, Jim Colborne, Rich Sheinblum, the waterfalls at Royal Park where Brett attacked the 400 mark. Busby, two no-hitters, one. Kansas City, here I come. Wasn't all there. There were strikes and Billy Ball there. But once again, a brand new season called.
All right, we are back, and we are lucky to have him back, the legend himself, Art Stewart. Art, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good, and good to be back with you. And you're always doing good when you're in first place. I just hope it's that way 3 weeks from today.
I know. It's amazing to be able to say that in September, isn't it?
It's what it's all about. You know, being in baseball like I have 62 years, that's September and October, and that's what you play for, and spring training you dream about, and all through the grind of the season, you hope that you're there.
Yeah, you hope you play long enough that you have to bring your winter coats, you know, to the ballpark.
Exactly.
You know, well, speaking of the end of the season, you know, keeping on the Royals playoff push here, you know, with the game the other day, obviously Duffy goes down, and but we got a chance to see Brandon Finnegan, and already, you know, 3 months after being drafted, I believe the first, you know, player actually from this year's draft to make his debut. What did you think of his performance, and was it what you expected?
Well, like I thought, it was what I expected. I had seen him just recently. You know, down in the minor leagues, where he had a phenomenal. He started out in Wilmington, he went to Double-A, and then Triple-A. He, at every level, he succeeded. He only gave up, I think, two runs in about 25 or 26, 27 innings.
Wow.
And he, as I told Nate Yost, when we brought him up, I said, you know, there's exceptions, and he's an exception. Remember when they caught Chris Sale up after being drafted that year. Duffy has got that, Finnegan has that makeup that nothing bothers him. He's cool as a cucumber. He wants the ball, and he's got a plus fastball with great life, and he has a wipeout slider that I compare to Steve Carlton in his prime. It's that good.
And
I think But you know, managers they want to see it, and Ned was very cautious. And but after he saw what he saw the other day, he said, "Uh-oh," he said, "that's exactly what you're talking about." So I think you're gonna, as we go down a stretch, you're gonna keep more Mr. Finnegan in tighter situations.
And you know what I like is he's experienced, you know, as far as pressure goes, having just pitched in Omaha in the World Series, you know, back in what I guess May, whenever that was.
Yeah, 25,000-30,000 people, and he's, you know, and I think that helped him walking out to Yankee Stadium. Yet, you know, with that crowd on Saturday, that he handled it well. You know, the other thing too, John, is exceptional about him. He's a left-hander that pounds the strike zone.
Yeah, and well, and from what, and you brought it up earlier, the slider, the plus slider, you know, and you know, if you got an aggressive fastball and a dominant second pitch like that, I mean, that's the makeup for hopefully a very long and successful baseball career, especially in a Royals uniform.
Yes, yes. Well, we're really excited about him, and he has, you know, barring an injury, has a bright future.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it. He's definitely off to a good first step. But Finnegan aside, and you know, now with Hosmer back, and you know, Ned having gone through this before in Milwaukee a few years ago, and hopefully having learned from their mistakes, they've managed to avoid the long losing streak, and in fact last week managed to piece together a four-game streak with barely scoring any runs. But what
That's
I'm getting
right.
at here, it really, you know, from my perspective, it seems like everything's kind of turning up in the right direction, getting the right bounces. You know, Ned Yost making, you know, questionable calls at time, but you know, like I mentioned, hopefully learning from his mistakes a few years ago, and now with Hosmer back healthy, I think the team's better than ever. You know, offensively we could improve slightly, obviously, but I think we're primed and ready to go to make a good push.
Well, I agree with you, and if our offense picks up, there's no question we have a good opportunity with the you know, with the starting pitching and probably the best 7, 8, 9 pitchers in all of baseball, and Herrera and Davis and Holland has been unbelievable.
Oh, it's been amazing.
And the other thing we got, what we feel pretty good news this morning, I don't know if you've heard it yet, but the diagnosis on Danny Duffy is there's no structural damage. There's some inflammation in the shoulder area, and they're hoping that they'll pitch this one start like Ventura did.
Oh, that's incredible news, because I mean, though,
if that's true, then things look pretty bright.
Yeah, I mean, he has been everything I think the Royals thought he would be. And I think now, having come back from the Tommy Johns, I think he's even surprising people at this point. I knew people thought he could be good. You know, I mean, to me, you watch him and he reminds you of Kershaw, you know, in the sense, you know, obviously the lefty and his stuff and his age. You know, that'd be amazing if he could get there. But obviously no one in the history of baseball has done what Kershaw's doing this season.
Well, no, but that's just phenomenal, and puts you back to the shades of Sandy Koufax out there. But I will say this about Danny Duffy. He's in the top five in all of baseball for ERA, and he's in the top three for opponent's batting average against. So he's up with the elite.
You know, and I mean, if we could just back him up with a few more runs. I mean, his win-loss record, which, you know, is not bad, but it would be that much better. Maybe, you know, a few more wins. And I mean, it all just, to me, Art, in the big picture, this season offensively has been such a disappointment. It is amazing. It just proves that how good the pitching really is, and more importantly, in my opinion, how great the defense is and has been.
Yeah, the defense has been just phenomenal. And it's up in the top three in baseball, and that those two things, as you mentioned, have really put us where we're at.
Yeah, in the position for the first time really in 29 years to make the playoffs. And, you know, and I live out here on the West Coast, and, you know, to watch the games on TV, you know, to call people back in Kansas City, and I'm actually going to be back there in the beginning of October. But what's the feeling like? Does it remind you of what I'll consider the good days, you know, back in the Ewing Conference?
Yeah, there's a lot of fans are into it. We pushed close to 140,000, 150,000 over a year ago. The fans are responding. We had some great turnouts in our last homestand, and then of course, you know, it's kids back to school and things like that. Football season coming on, and we had crowds again. Well, against our last series. I'm trying to think. Over the weekend, before we hit the road, we have over 105,000 on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
That's great. And for you listening across the country, you might say, like, you know, out in L.A., it's like, okay, that's not a big deal. But Kauffman Stadium's, it's not that big of a stadium. So those numbers are very impressive. That's pretty much near capacity, correct, Art?
Yes, and in addition, you know, you gotta realize this is not a big city like L.A., Chicago, yeah. New York. It's one of the smaller cities in Major League Baseball. So the ratio of the fan base is pretty darn good for, you know, the turnouts.
No, absolutely. And you know what? It's a family-oriented city, too. I mean, like, I was kind of ragging on the team, as was Ned last week when they drew 18,000 on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and they're right in the thick of a playoff race for the first time in two decades. That upset me a little bit, but the defense is always, you know, the kids got school. And, you know, it's a family Midwest town. So I'll accept that excuse, but here's my challenge to Kansas City. If or when we make the playoffs and, you know, hopefully win a World Series, I you can't use that excuse next season. I want to see a full stadium, because I was young in the 80s, but correct me if I'm wrong, it would be full in 1979, 1981 on a weeknight, wouldn't it?
No question. You know, after we won the World Series in 85, John, we went 11 consecutive years with 2 million or plus in this population.
Wow. And that's back when the city was probably half the size that it is now, population.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And so
that tells you something. But the fans are really excited. The media is into it, the national media. We've had a big story from the New York Times the other day, a writer coming in and did a big article on us. And you probably saw Sports Illustrated did a front page cover. So it's starting a lot to resemble 85 in a lot of respects. And you know, 85 was not our greatest team either.
No.
As far as all-around offense, but it's like this team. We had good defense and solid pitching.
You know what? I mean, I would love to get into the scouting and really, really, if you want to dissect film, like, to really as hard as you possibly could. But I would be curious to see how many outs just the outfield has saved, because they're so fast and they all have such great gloves. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, probably 50, 60 singles, doubles that should have fallen that they got to. I mean, how many runs does that save over the course of a season?
Tremendous.
That's a 50, you know, that might be the difference between being in first place right now and then being two games behind the Indians.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we have such a big outfield out there to cover. It's one of the biggest in baseball, along with Detroit's. And Tywin Dyson's out there, or Kane's out there, along with Gordon, the Gold Glove, and left.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Aoki has been fine.
It's been great.
But Ned's been replacing him in late innings with a Kane in right and Dyson in center and Gordon in left. And, boy, you're talking about closing the gaps quick. It's unbelievable.
You know what? And then on top of that, with the way Davis and Holland, I mean, it gets harder to hit. And the defense tightens up those last two innings. I mean, you could make a legitimate argument that the Royals really play six inning baseball games right now with a lead.
We have something crazy figures. I don't have them off the top of my head, but if we're leading the seventh inning, it's something like 53-4 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the last blown save off the top of my head. It's been a magical year, you know, for the Royals. And actually for you too, Art, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today is because you've been on a little bit of a barnstorming tour yourself with the release of your book, The Art of Scouting. How are you exhausted? Are you tired? Are you tired of talking about it? Or are you
No, I'm still enjoying talking about it. George Brett and I just did a huge signing at Sprint Center. That there was a tremendous turnout. There's been a lot of the commissioner's office had gotten a copy of the book and liked it so much they asked Major League Baseball Network to do an hour interview with me, which I did when I was out east looking at our Wilmington club.
I saw the interview. It was great. It was great to see
you
up there.
After that, the sales spiraling around the country so fast that we're in they're in the second printing out that's coming out this week now. I did the book. There's so many baseball books, and they had asked me for some time to do a book because they've been in the game so long. But I finally agreed to do it because I said if I can dedicate it to the scouts and tell the fans some things that they just have never read about, what goes on behind the scenes, because for every player you see up in the major leagues, that player was seen by a scout, whether it's in the cornfields of Iowa or down south, or in the oil fields where they find Mantle, or over in the sugarcane fields where we found Yordano Ventura. Some scout found them, so that's what it's all about. And it really goes into a lot of depth about what happens in the draft room, what really goes on behind the scenes, the major trades, what a scout's life is, some of the things that brought about a draft, and it's really worked out pretty well.
That's great, and are you surprised with the popularity or the amount of publicity or how people have taken to the book? I mean, like you mentioned, you're already into a second printing. I'm sure your publisher is more than happy with you.
Yeah. Oh, I sure am. And I didn't anticipate anything like this, but it's been tremendous. And the reviews have been good. New York Times gave a nice review, and we've got a number of nice, reviews, and it's really surprised me to a certain extent. I didn't expect anything like this, but it has been enjoyable.
Well, I mean, for me, like I see you on the MLB Network, and it's not really surprising for me from the outside, because Art, having had you on the show and just ask you like two or three simple questions, and then the depths. The answers, like the stories, you know, whether it's about a Bo Jackson or Brett Saberhagen, just like you said, the behind the scenes stuff is entertaining. And just to get a glimpse, today with social media, with Twitter, Facebook, everyone's got a picture and a camera up at all times documenting things. Well, that didn't happen 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And so for you to be able to...
Well, John, when I started scouting in 1953, all the World Series were in the daytime. You never saw any split finger fastballs. You never saw any weight training. You didn't see bullpen specialists. There was no draft. There was no agents. The media coverage wasn't as massive as it was today. The statistical thing that we know today, certainly we didn't know then. Right. So there's still very many changes, but scouting still remains the same in identifying and finding talent.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that's probably changed is, you know, where the airplanes fly to, you know, to go scout people.
Exactly. Exactly. And still, I to this day, am convinced the toughest job in baseball. And the scouts are really the faceless men of baseball. Like, nobody knows who, you know, who signed that player. But the scouts really don't care as long as the club knows what, that they turn in a report on a player when he's 17 years old. And they were right about it, and he projected this 17-year-old player what he was going to be, and he became that. And that's the most self-satisfying thing that we get as scouts in this game, is to know that we were right on projecting a 17-year-old on what he would be when he's 23 years old and reach major league stardom.
Yeah, that's – I mean, that's because, you know, like – and that's why scouting hasn't changed, because as a scout, I'm assuming, you know, as you see players over the years, like an amazing player looks like an amazing player, whether that's 1963, 2002, or 2041. You know, he's going to be a five-tool guy. He's going to have the speed, you know, hit a curveball. You know, it's going to be the same guy. That's going to be, yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the one thing in baseball that will never change.
No question about it, and it's you know, the territorial scout, and I emphasize that in the book, the guy that has two or three states and gets to know not the, the boy so well, but the parents, the girlfriend, has a history of the boy, and maybe seeing him 2 or 3 years, whereas a cross-checker will come in. You'll see him one day. He may have a good day that day, or he may walk three times if he's a position player. And what kind of report, you know, is he gonna make? Yeah. So this we call him a mud scout. You know, we call him the guy who beats the bushes, but he is really the most valuable part of an organization, finding these players the way they do, and. This is really what I love about the game, and that's was being a territorial scout.
Now, what was your original territory, or maybe what was your favorite?
I originally worked out of Chicago, and I had Illinois, Wisconsin, and Indiana. That's what I originally started with, and I was so very, very fortunate. I had two men that are two of the greatest scouts in the history of baseball. In his late years in the game, last few years in the game, I got, he was my mentor, and that was Paul Critchell, a great scout, to sign Lou Gehrig, Whitey Ford, Bill Rizzuto.
Wow.
And I get good advice from him and Tom Greenway, who signed Mantle, among other great players. He was the other one that I got such good, great, you know, great, great advice.
What a blessing.
Paul Critchell said to me, never leave the park early. And it proved to be true. I was at a game in Chicago Heights, Illinois in 1957 to see a big left-hander along with a dozen other scouts. And that left-hander was Jerry Colangelo, and who you probably know. He brought baseball to Phoenix and the NBA to Phoenix. And
absolutely.
Just before the game, he was scratched. Nobody knew why, but he wasn't going to pitch. So all the scouts said, gee, one of the scouts said that third baseman down in Kankakee is pitching or playing today. It's only half an hour away. Everybody starts for their cars, and so did I. And I remember what Paul Critchell told me. Don't leave the park early, Art. You never know what you may see. Well, I stayed. And all of a sudden, I hear a smack and a smack, smack, and a bullpen. And here's this kid about 5'11", 165 pounds, throwing the bullpen, warming up in Colangelo's place. He walks out on the mound. He pitches a one-hit shutout, strikes out 17. And that pitcher, and I ended up signing him, with ball four, Jim, about a 20-game winner.
Wow. That's
so that was that gives you an idea of, you know, getting that kind of advice. And the same thing happened with Don Greenway. He said, Art, never, never discount a letter writer. He said, if somebody writes a letter, which they do to kids, you know, kids that want to, like, be ball players, they'll write letters to their office, and they send them to you. Well, I had a letter that I had gotten, and it was from a boy that was a freshman at Northern Illinois. There was no college rule then, and he said, Mr. Stewart, I would appreciate if you come and see me play. I'm pitching with a summer team in Genoa, Illinois, and I want to drop out of college and start my baseball career. And so I went out, I called him, and he said he's pitching in Genoa, 60 miles outside of Chicago. And if you can picture the movie, The Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
That's what the setting was, the cornfield and the outfield.
Okay.
And this left-hander warms up, and he pitches a complete nine-inning game, and he struck out 17 or 18, pitched a two-hit shutout, and I ended up signing him also. That pitcher was Fritz Peterson, who was a 20-game winner for the New York Yankees, but better known for the white spiking with Doc Medich.
Wow, so when you get a letter like that from an unknown, are you just saying, you know what, he's taking the initiative to have me come see him, or do you call around to see if anyone else has heard of the guy, or do you just say, you know what, I'm going to
go? Yeah, well, what you do, John, you look at the most interesting ones, and the others, you can't, you have bird dogs around, and you send one of them out, and if they see enough ability, then you go and see them. But in this case, it sounded interesting. He was a left-hander. He was a college kid, and we worked him out in Comiskey Park, and ended up signing him on a trunk in the visiting clubhouse. And an interesting thing on both of them, you know, Peterson being a white swapper with Kekich, and Boughton writing that controversial book that stirred all of baseball and the commissioner up. So one day I get a call from Roy Haney, the general manager, and he says, Art, he says, boy, you signed two guys here that are really stirring up a lot of publicity in Peterson and Boughton. And I said, but Roy, they're both 20-game winners for the New York Yankees, weren't they? And he never brought it up again.
Yeah, he's like, good point there. You did your job perfectly. Yeah, that's great, man. See, that's, you know what, and that, like, that story, you know, that's exactly why your book is doing so well, Art. You know, it's like true baseball fans, and there's millions of us out there that love the history, you know, and people might not like baseball as a sport, but it is the only professional sport.
Well, we try to tell the story of what goes on behind the scenes and the real true story on Bo Jackson, you know, how it all was done. It was a great scout story. And the player, Riker, that made the draft possible because he got $205,000 $205,000 and the owners thought that the industry was going crazy back in 1961 and now, or 64. And now, of course, they don't think anything of giving a player $4, $6, $7, $8 million in the first round. So,
yeah,
so
I know
it's something when you look back on that. But we try to cover all phases. The Great Baseball Academy that was a dream and outside the box thinking from Mr. Kaufman, and we try to cover every phase that affects scouting in baseball.
Speaking of the Baseball Academy, and right now it's kind of a touchy subject because publicly, we don't know what's going on with the Ron Washington situation, having resigned recently in Texas. And I'm you know, the academy, the history with the Royals, would that even be a possibility moving forward in the future, whether in a few years down the line, does Ron still have a relationship with the Royals organization?
Well, I can't answer that. All I can say is that had a wonderful visit with him when he was in Texas last week, and he had no indication of this. In fact, he was talking about the tough season that he went through.
But
he said it gave him a chance to see the young players and for the future. And he really talked the future was still there for him.
Yeah.
So it must have been a severe personal thing that no one really knows what it is.
Yeah.
And they made it very clear, of course, it was not a problem that he had in 2009. So it had to be something else. And
yeah.
I always visited with him when he came in, and many times he said to me, he says, "Art, you know, if it wasn't for the Baseball Academy, I probably would be working on a shrimp boat down in New Orleans now."
And that's
what he thought, you know, about the opportunity he got because of the Baseball Academy. And a lot of people didn't know this, but everybody thinks of Frank White and UL Washington, Ron Washington, but 14 players in the short time the Academy existed went to the big leagues. So it really, really was a great thing, and it was way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
We had video back in 1970 that they think is so great now. Charlie Lau brought video down there, and we had all of these things that they're doing in weight training and different things that they have today, and including testing the eyes. Crawford said, "Do we test the boys' eyes before we sign them?" And everybody had a meeting, and everybody looked at each other, and he said, "Do we take them to an eye doctor?" And, of course, the answer was no. And he had this famous Dr. Harrison on the West Coast devise what they call a biopter that tested the eyes, and especially depth perception. If you don't have depth perception, you don't see under the lights. Well, there wasn't a lot of night baseball in high schools in those days, and so there were a lot of mistakes made for players that had depth perception. And once we had that, we used that, and there was a case in Peoria, Illinois, where I tested a young catcher's eyes that was going to go on the first 10, 15 players, and he had no depth perception, so we backed up and take him. Mets took him number 11, gave him a lot of money, and he never got out of an A-League because he couldn't see under the lights.
Wow.
And that was about three years, Kaufman. The owners were after him to give up that patent that he had him devised, and finally he did. And then, of course, it's a common thing today. But the Academy was so far ahead of its time.
Yes.
When you think about it, it was tremendous.
Well, not only did it graduate, like you said, 14 players to the big leagues, you know, these guys were enrolled at community college, getting an education the entire time, and you know, really, yeah, like you said, on the forefront, really just making the model for what is now pretty much, you know, every winter down in Florida, you know, fall ball, you know, it's just the constant.
Yeah, well, in the offspring of what you see in Latin America now, but everybody just about has a baseball academy over there.
Wow, that's amazing.
But it really, I just give you one more brief idea of how how great it was the fact that we were making a deal, Edgar Patrick, for Nelson Riles with Pittsburgh, and we were to put a prospect in, and they were arguing about what the prospect would be, and I signed a boy in Chicago for the Academy by the name of Winston Cole, and anyways, Danny Murtaugh saw Winston Cole with the Academy team, and he said, if we could get Winston Cole, I'd make that deal. Well, we put Winston Cole in the deal, and Nelson Bryles comes to the Royals, and goes out and wins 16 games that year. So there were so many benefits on just wow. not just the guys making it that you signed for the Royals, but giving added depth to the farm system to make deals like that.
That's a great You pretty much from scratch created an asset that allowed you to acquire a 16-game winner. I mean, that's incredible. Yes. And brilliant. And that was all Ewing Kaufman's baby, right?
That was his idea. Well, when he bought the Royals in an early meeting, he said, "You know, you mean, gentlemen, the only way we can get talent is through the draft or through waivers or through a trade." And his thinking outside of the box was, why can't we go in other sports, look at track men, football, good athletes that maybe not have played much baseball. And that's how it all got up. That's how it all started in 1970.
Wow. Man. Well, Art, what do you think? You think this is the year? You think we can get it done before we wrap up? Think we can get a World Series back in Kansas City?
Well, we got our fingers crossed. And if we play like we did in the month of August, I would say yes.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. Well, Art, appreciate the time, and like as before, it went well past what I had anticipated. But as usual, amazing stories, amazing insight. For those of you listening, or that want to read or buy Art's book, The Art of Scouting, I'm sure at your local bookstore, Amazon.com, book retailers all across the country. But Art, thank you for your time, and you know what? May even try to get a hold of you here in a couple weeks. You know, once the playoffs start, we'd love to have you back on. But Art, it was amazing.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Pleasure being with you.
Hey, we'll talk soon. Okay.
Okay.
Go Royals.
Leonard and Gura throw the pea. Darryl Porter, whoops, he's in St. Louis talking baseball. Baseball in KC.
Now when you're talking Royal baseball, Jim Colborn, Rich Sheinblum, the waterfalls at Royal Park where Brett attacked the 400 mark, Busby, two no-hitters, one, Kansas City, here I come.
Thanks again, Art, for coming on. Appreciate the time. Apologize for the quality again, but I'm sure hopefully you bared with it.
Love it.
And you're still listening now, so that's great. And
thank you for listening.
Yes, the season's winding down here. We've got a few games left. I feel comfortable now that the Royals are going to make the playoffs with the wild card.
Putting it all in the hands of a one-game playoff.
Oh, man, look, as I'm saying this, this is going into the Detroit series, so you're listening to this Tuesday. You know exactly what happened. So I don't want to say if, ands, or buts, but at the end, we have to win the division. We have to get the division. It's a matter of you have to reward. Kansas City needs two. They need three home playoff games. They need to advance. You know, they need to reward the fans. They need to remind the fans in Kansas City what it's like to go to a game that matters. And so, and you know, to have only one game there, which, you know, if they win the wild card, then they would have the home advantage or what. And so I kind of win either way, because if they get Seattle or Oakland, I'm going to that game, you know, regardless of which city it's in. But so hopefully they just win the division so they can just get some home games. It all just boils down.
Let's get some home
games. It's just
games.
Building the fan base.
Go Royals.
That's what I want to do. And you know, all these games are sold out this weekend. They're bringing out Thunder Sticks. You know, everyone's going to be all Anaheimed up. They're going to bring up it's because I listen to, you know, to the sports coming out of Kansas City.
Of,
they're excited
guys,
about the Thunder Sticks.
This.
So, God damn it, I'm excited about the Thunder Sticks.
Let's see
it's a
how
Thunder
you
Sticks or is a Thunder Sticks are a playoff thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a playoff
getting
thing.
Getting ready, I see.
Who's going to bust out Thunder Sticks against the White Sox on Friday night? It's like, that's just annoying.
Yeah.
Players are like, why'd they give these sticks to everybody? We're just playing the White Sox. It's like, who gives a shit?
But now there is
a reason to care, and God damn it, I got playoff tickets waiting for me in Kansas City.
Let's
they went on sale. People lined up down the blocks to
right.
get them. It's exciting. And so, and the Chiefs are awful, so everyone's just
written. Because the Kansas City Royals were selling iPhone 6s, so they got right out.
They could have been. You're like, is this the new iPhone line? No, these are potential playoff tickets.
Wow, bigger than iPhone 6 in Kansas
and on
City.
Okay, so in the thousands of hours of sports that you've watched, Eric, how many times have you been like, oh, wait, was that Stacy? Was that Jeff right there? Was that Jeff? How many times have you seen a friend or family member in the stands while watching a televised sporting event?
I don't know how often I've seen
it. Has it happened, though? Can you recall an event? Dig deep.
God, no. You put me on the spot. I don't know if I've actually
Here's the thing.
Anyone.
I think that's something as a sports fan that you would remember.
Yeah.
And so I'm giving a shout out to Mike Nielsen, who just the other day,
hilarious,
as a fan, made it on the Fox broadcast of the Royals game. And a good friend of ours, you know, screenshotted it, put it up online. But it blew my mind. I'm like, that's the first time. And I'm continuing, by the way, I continually get throughout the season messages from people that are at Royals games because they are using my image in the seventh inning.
Yes.
From the game, for a big red beard, look for me. I don't know if I have sunglasses. I haven't seen it. I went to a couple games and then just,
right.
You know, by the seventh inning, the last thing you're looking at is the scoreboard. Usually. And so, but yeah, so they're using that. So good, Mike Nielsen, congratulations.
Good
man.
On you, Mike.
You got on TV nationally, kind of, regionally, nationally. I don't know.
That's right.
But I think that's about it, right?
Let's land this plane as usual.
You got anything you want to wrap up with?
It's beautiful out here in Pacific Beach, California. Everyone should spend a little time. Little time by the ocean.
Enjoy life, guys. Take advantage. Live a day. Let's go. You want to go with like an over the top, you know, just like self help kind of closing to land this thing. Just
I'll say this: she doesn't love you, man, and break up with her. These are
exactly.
my relationship advice. If guys, if you're out there and you're listening, let me say this: she does not love you, and also if you're dating somebody. Just break up with her. Just break up with her. It's just gonna. Let's just cut to the chase.
Look, it's better to be on to actually do the breaking as opposed to being broken. You know, sometimes.
Cut her
so
loose.
That's what he's saying. Do that, and you know,
loose.
All your suspicions are absolutely correct. Every one of them. For all you insecure men out there in relationships, all those sneaking suspicions.
She doesn't love you, man.
Are correct.
She does not love you.
Dig deeper into that Facebook account. You'll find that stuff.
We'll talk to you next time. Until then, stay obsessed.
Absolutely, guys.
Oh, and